Accession number 19101, Reel 5.
Reel 5.
The Americans bombed the other hospital ship, which was a brand new ship, Italian, on a maiden voyage. And they did not only bomb it once, they bombed it twice. They also machine gunned that hospital ship. And one of the patients on the ship was our battalion surgeon, who had been wounded in the shoulder. And he lost his arm during this attack. That was his end of his career as a surgeon. So we were, as I said, in Tunis waiting for a return to the continent. Nothing happened. They couldn't take us. There were 7,000, I believe, over in German or French Italian hospitals and overspills. And in other words, there were 7,000 stranded. They couldn't be returned. So we, the 7th of May, a surgeon came to me and he said, can you make out what that is over there? And he pointed in a direction. And I suppose I had decorations, and so he said, well, better ask him rather than somebody else. And so I said, well, there's artillery. But how could artillery be engaged in an area just outside Tunis? So we didn't realize that had been a breakthrough. So I thought perhaps it was one of a scout, mobile scouts, which came and let off some round of ammunition and disappeared again, as it happened in different places. But it was not to be. Moments later, the RAF came approaching Tunis and did that dreaded anger, because they fly straight on, and the moment they turn, that's when they drop the bomb in a different direction. You don't know if you are the target or somebody else, and you don't know when they turn. So we saw wave after wave of bombers coming, and they dropped bombs fairly close, really, to Tunis. So we realized there must have been a breakthrough. And in the afternoon, we were told to destroy documents which could be of use to an enemy, and prepare to for captivity. Later on that day, a French gendarme and a German medic were standing outside the hospital gate, and they were expecting the first enemy troops. So after a long wait, where we had somebody took refreshments out to that German medic there, and the poor policeman who was waiting there as well. And then a British armored car, approached. He stopped. He got the message. This was a hospital. Despite the fact it was not registered as a hospital, it was an overspill of the local military hospital. So he came with his armored vehicle and just had a quick look around, and then sent a wireless message to his unit explaining that this was in fact a hospital. So we were technically prisoners of war. Troops only arrived very much later on the day. They settled down in the forecourt of that hospital, and on the steps they put up a cooker and brewed some tea. and offered us some tea. We never had English tea with milk and so on. It was something new. But it tasted all right, so we had some tea. The next two or three days, it was activity in the air. We didn't see any land-based troops or vehicles, but we saw plenty air activity and anti-aircraft fire, which went further and further back. So by the 13th, I think the war had finished in Tunis, officially, but not privately. There were still pockets of resistance. I know somebody who was taken prisoner at Christmas 43. He held out that long. And his, one of his colleagues was in such a bad shape, he was repatriated to Germany because of his condition. He was starved and had dysentery and this and that. But officially it was finished on the 13th. 3 days before, on the 10th, we were moved from the hospital on lorries, not in ambulances, on lorries. And we had some pretty bad cases there. One, he was shot in his backside and he couldn't sit. Another one, he had a bullet straight through his chest, he couldn't breathe, and so on. But they all had to go onto this different lorries. There was a whole convoy of lorries. Badly organized it was. So they took us to, before we got to this place, I'd just like to mention, we came past our old positions where we had fought the bitter battle of Cactus Farm. That was where the British Army tried to get through and did not succeed. So they had to use a different a route to go to Tunis. And this was absolutely awful, the sight of it. It was 3 days or 4 days after the breakthrough and was still littered with bodies and burnt out tanks, brain gun carriers and so on. It was absolute shambles. So we had a halt up there of about an hour, best part of an hour, before they let our convoy through. So I was able to have a good look at the result of our defense. Eventually we went through, we were taken through Manchester Bab to a railway station near Souk El Kemis, I think it was called. And when we arrived there, they were not prepared to have a convoy of wounded people. There was absolutely no indication that we were wounded. And so all they could offer us was give us a blanket. And we had to make ourselves comfortable for the night on a freshly plowed field. The British officer in charge apologized for it. The German medical officer examined the different cases, and we were told that there will be no train until the morning, so we had to be comfortable on that field. So the next morning, the German medical officer, accompanied by an English officer, decided who was a patient who could not sit or needed more room than the others. And the entry of my bullet in my leg was such that I had difficulty in sitting, at least sitting for any length of time. So I was fortunate. I went into a railway track where there were only about a dozen prisoners in it, some Germans, some Italians, all wounded, some more serious than I. There was an Italian who had 6 or 7 bullets in his body, and he could hardly move. So we entered the train, but it was a cattle truck. There were no blankets, there was no straw, there was absolutely nothing. It was a bare cattle truck. And we could stretch out While the rest of them, they had to sit for the journey, which lasted 3 days and three nights, before we came to Bonn. And in Bonn, we disembarked, were taken by lorry again, this time French lorries. They took us past an American tent city, more or less, all with red crosses, all neatly tidy, and so on. And we went straight past through a large transit camp where we had to go into this transit camp. There was no way of any comfort. The sun was shining hot. There were no toilet facilities. And we had to use a corner somewhere. And we were staying there for a few days. The sergeant in charge, the British sergeant in charge, says when we ask him when we get some food or water, he said, "Water is here, you can help yourselves. But food, I don't think you will see any today. You may be lucky to get some tomorrow." And so on. True to his word, there was no food. The next day, later in the day, we had some of a typical biscuits which the British Army had, and that was it. So we were staying there a few days and moved on from there to a camp in Philippeville. This was all transit camp, by the way. There was a British officer. He was most apologetic. He didn't realize that most of us were wounded because we had some others in between as well, between us. So he said he couldn't he couldn't help us as good as he would like, but he said he would make it as comfortable as possible. And he brought some blankets and so on, which we could stretch out to have a cover from the boiling hot sun. He tied one end onto the barbed wire and the other side a row of sticks. So we had at least, we were protected from the sun. He said, "I can give you another concession. It's only 5 minutes walk from here, there is a sea, the Mediterranean, and you can swim in there, provided you don't swim out too far and don't stray over the edge where the guards are standing." So we went for a swim there. We had, and the food was better than the previous camp, but the staple diet, like potatoes and bread, was missing. There was a little bit of bread to be shared, a loaf of bread to be shared about 12 or 18 people, and in other words, a slice each or so. And but he had other things. As I said, no bread, no potatoes, but he had peaches and that sort of things in tins. So we had a share out there. This camp commandant, he was an excellent man. I can't criticize him in any way. That the food wasn't there was not his fault. So in the evening, he allowed us to have some entertainment. We had some artists between the prisoners. There was an opera singer who came from the opera house in Vienna. He gave us a sing-song and a few other things. And we had a magician there. The magician, of course, he was hungry as well, so he had a crafty trick. He said to the commandant, "I need a loaf of bread for this trick. And can you cut it in four?" And then he asked for three volunteers. And then he said, "Now we all eat this bread." He ate a quarter, and the others ate their quarter. And after a while he says, "I'm sorry, I have forgotten the formula. I can't get the bread back." So that was one way of feeding himself. And this camp, as I said, it was not the fault of the commandant. It was excellent in other ways. We had our swim. We had a fatal accident. Somebody had a heart attack and died during the swim. So the swimming had to stop. So we only had 2 or 3 days to go before we were moved on again.
This is where?
That was in Philippeville, in Algeria. And in from Philippeville, the majority were marched to the port, which was about 2 miles away. But I was able to go by transport, so I didn't have the trouble of walking. We were taken onto a British merchantman, an armed merchantman, by the name of Carpenter of London. So on the ship, in daytime, we were allowed to move freely on deck above and see the coast and see the sights. It was partly intended to make sure that if there were submarines in the area, to see that we were actually Germans and not British. So we think. I may be wrong. But we were allowed to move freely. There was, however, one little section which was cordoned off, where they had an anti-aircraft missile launcher, and we were not allowed to go there. At night, we had to go below deck. Next morning, we could get up again. We went into the port of Algiers, but not to disembark, but there were other ships waiting for us. So from Algiers, we went to Oran. And in Oran, there were Americans waiting for us. And we thought they were going to go somewhere into action. They were absolutely fully armed, and masses of them. And then we realized they were our guards who had to accompany us to a sports stadium up the hill near Oran. There were more Americans with guns than there were prisoners. We had to march up the hill, including myself. There were no ambulances there. And this camp was situated near a main road. Around the camp, there were little disks. We couldn't identify. We didn't know what they were. But in the evening, we realized they were lights. Up to then, we had been in total darkness, blackout everywhere. But the Americans didn't trust us, so they put carbide-generated lights around the compound. And on the side where the public was going past, they had put down the latrines without the screen. So if you wanted to go there, you had to relieve yourself in full view of a population. We were only 2 days there and taken to a real bad camp in Mascara. And there were several thousand, some people say about 15,000 in there in separate compounds. No accommodation, no cover from the sun, no medical attention, except for a German medical officer who had some plasters. And there were masses of towers, watchtowers, and it was all the floodlit, the whole area, and many, many guards. So we were left there, and we had a watery meal once a day, hardly any nourishment in it. In fact, on one occasion, there was an American officer coming to supervise the distribution of the food, but he never got too near to this cooking facility where the food was served out in scoops. So one of our boys who spoke fluent English went to him and pointed out to him what sort of food we had once a day. And then the American started stirring around and he found one big bean in it. Then he blew his top because some of his staff had been on the fiddle, selling the food which was intended to us, selling it on the black market. So that was the end of it, and we had better food afterwards.
This camp was at Mascara?
Mascara, like the woman, they had mascara, you see. And we were there for about 2 months in shining, you know, hot daylight in July, June, July. And so we were then taken to a place which we were told was actually already in Morocco. And a day after this, we were taken back by lorry to the same place we had come. And we recognized different Bedouin tribes which had settled down, and a little lake here and so on. We said, they're not surely they're not taking us back to Mascara again after all this. And so we turned off at one place which we recognized and were taken to Oran again, where we had been before we went to Mascara. In Oran, we were embarking on American Liberty ships, and some crews, some guards were very nice. We were lucky we had, as a commandant, somebody who had a ranch in Texas, and he gave us, during the trip, demonstration with his lasso and so on, and that was a commandant of the ship. Others were not so lucky. They were starved, but we had plenty. We even had more because some of the fellows had were seasick, so they couldn't eat. So we had more shareholding. So after just over a week, zigzagging across the Atlantic, being scared of German submarines, we landed first of all in the port of New York and New Jersey, and we were taking off the Liberty ship just a few hundred yards from the Statue of Liberty. And there we were in little ferries, which took us away from the Liberty ships. And we saw the symbol of a free, and we had more guards around us than we had men again. We were taken to New Jersey, where we were deloused. It was a very pleasant experience because over the last 6 months or so, we were full of lice. As soon as you cracked a louse, you had another one there, and it's an experience I will never forget, the lice. So after we were deloused, we had to assemble in a forecourt of this delousing station, shall I say, and there was a large Pullman train there, and so we said to get in, a Pullman train, perfect, very snobbish, with ventilation, big propellers, and so on. It was August, which was even warm in New Jersey, and so the journey commenced. The only thing we were limited was they did not have a door in front of the lavatory. They were all removed in case we tried to escape through the lavatory. It was a safety measure, we understand that. So a moment later, there was a lot of rattling going on, and there was a cook coming with a big container, a cook with a white hat, started serving us an enormous meal. And where we hadn't seen anything like this, never to mention eaten anything like this for months now. So we had a truly good meal there. We had some iced drink to go with it. And when then a sergeant or a guard came and collected all the crockery and so on, a moment later, there was a second helping coming in after a pudding and so on, you see. And anyone who wanted more drink, more ice drink, was welcome. So we were traveling through the countryside. It was getting dark. And like on the continent or in Africa, where everything was under blackout, here was everything in, like in peacetime, in broad daylight.
We came you were with a group of wounded POWs.
No, this was a mixed bag. A doctor came later on to ask for anyone who had any injuries and so on. So it was all recorded. And when our train arrived at the target where we were going to, they were already informed of our different problems. But it was like peacetime. There was one town we came through, there was a fun fair. There was a big wheel and all sorts of things. It was like a dream, really. So eventually the train was traveling for 2 days and two nights. And we said, where on earth are they going to take us? And we took a note. And then we realized some people who had some knowledge of America, then there was Atlanta, and then was Birmingham. So eventually the train stopped at a place called Jackson in Mississippi, and there was a large hotel by the name of Heidelberg, a German name. So we had a meal there again. We continued the journey on a different line to Clinton, like President Clinton, in Mississippi, where we disembarked. There was a large prisoner of war camp, holding 3,000. We were the first lot to get there. After registration and so on, I was given a place where I was staying for the rest of the captivity in Mississippi, which was 18 months exactly. So, and then I was told to have a visit to the hospital, and then a few days later I was called in as an inpatient. Later on, two surgeons performed an operation for removal of shrapnel from my right leg, which caused me trouble. So,
what caused you trouble, the shrapnel or the operation?
No, the shrapnel. And the two surgeons, they were both Jewish, performed the operation excellent. The main surgeon was Captain Berlin, and his assistant was Captain... Now, Lieutenant Harris. He was the size of the physical appearance of the wrestler Big Daddy. Most unlikely sight of a surgeon, but there he was. He was excellent. So I spent a few months in hospital, convalescing, and came out just before Christmas into the camp. So I spent my first Christmas in America in the camp.